afternoon, sisters, but because we are co-chairs, we don't lift our hands up and so on. We're just fighting each time we want to speak, and one helps the other. Usually it's Carol helping me to facilitate a discussion, but, and let me stress to Carol, we also express our own views. Now, what we aim to do is to sit from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. today, or later or earlier, preferably. And there's travel arrangements for MPs, and if anybody else wants any sort of aid, well, they contact Lolly, our excellent secretary at SABC. There's lunch and there's some sort of supper arrangement where the staff don't have to stay extra hours. So they will arrange, as we used to do in local government. Is that what we're going to do? They're going to bring Nando's, but the people are vegetarian, they have to check what they want. So at lunchtime, Mr. Delivery or whatever, I never know why it's only Mr. Delivery, but person delivery will you get your orders and we will do it sometime by 7 o'clock. The aim is to have a break from 1 to 2, a tea at about 3:30, tea maybe at about 5, and then supper at about 7, and then hopefully we leave by 10. But I think we can finish sooner. The aim is actually twofold. One is to have gone through every clause in phase one of the bill, to acclimatize ourselves with what the clauses actually say, and to intervene here and there. And sometimes the interventions are final, because it doesn't relate to a policy issue. Like to change a full stop to a comma and vice versa will make no difference whatever the outcome of the policy debates. So those things, Vanara in particular, and Christine is assisting him, will finalize subcommittees. A subcommittee of a small team that processes it, and there we can have, if the NGOs want, a representative from themselves as well. But they will be looking at, you know, clause by clause. So I don't know what role they can play, but there's no harm in having them spot a comma or a full stop that we should have added or taken away, especially as some of them are academics too. The other thing to say is the National House of Traditional Leaders have made a submission to us, which you've got. We invited them to speak this morning for 20 minutes. They initially agreed and then retreated, but they have, I insisted, they at least write to us so that everybody's aware that they have been consulted in some form or another, and they've sent us a one-pager. And they said after the note, Bulalani went to Kulwar's camera, after the House of Traditional Leaders have engaged with Parliament around the traditional courts bill, they will want to come back to us on some of these issues. Well, this is something that doesn't quite make sense to me. But hey, hopefully I won't be around to have to attend to that in 2009, Shireen. And hopefully you will be, because they're your pals, and therefore. Oh, right. So, Bulalani just missed that your friends from the House of Traditional Leaders have written to us on the child justice bill. Okay. The next thing to say is that the formal processing of the bill will occur line by line. But we're also having informal discussions around policy issues, and that will be done in a subcommittee type system. And that will start at 2 o'clock. And in order to facilitate understanding, and in order for us all to quickly process technical issues, from 2 o'clock we will sit in a subcommittee today. And that will just be for members and the departments. It's a subcommittee. Now, we'll take no decisions whatsoever that are binding to anybody, just to facilitate the expediting of the bill. The reasons for that are severalfold. Our committee, as you know, has the largest amount of legislation, and we have bills like the Traditional Leaders Bill and so on that we must finish by the end of June. That's the 30th of June is the deadline for that bill, and that's a 30-page bill, and it'll be quite a challenging bill. Now we're getting more department responses. Or is this a consolidated document?
Chair, it's the one that I'm thinking about. The D document, there were some insertions made by the NGOs.
Oh, I don't think you would have done that. Yeah, but now my notes are on the other document, but that's fine. It's not your fault. It's fine. Okay. So are we agreeing then we're going to go close by close now, and then at 2 o'clock we'll break into a subcommittee. Okay? Yeah.
Chair, I think we said close by close for starting with the South African Police Services.
Yeah, and you're going to guide us. Okay, let's do that. Yeah. Okay, Carol, what they said, you might have not been there, that instead of going through close by close mechanically, we stopped, if I recall, yeah, 33, then you will guide us on which clauses in particular relate to the SAPS. And also to say finally that Lolly's, I have now resigned as Lolly's BC spokesperson, and if she wants to speak, she will speak for herself. And I secondly, am asking Lolly in particular, as the committee secretary, to ensure that I do not divert the meeting from its primary focus, which is the child justice bill, and that in a three-hour period, I'm only allowed to make one semi-facetious remark. And if I do more than one in a three-hour period, Lolly will chastise me, give me a warning, and then hand me over for assessment. I hope you'll give me an assessment department. But while I'm 52 years old, you have to think about what my mental age is. So I might qualify as 16 if you're charitable. So I hope that the bill will apply to me. But Carol has also promised that she will pinch me if I exceed one every 3 hours. Having said that, let's focus on the bill. Right, now the boss will guide us there. I come to everybody in particular. Oh, Shireen, why don't you do this? Introduce us to our friends from the various departments.
I was going to first object to being calling a Baas. I thought Baas governmentality was over. We're in a democratic parliament at the moment. So. Second point is, and I'm sure the NGOs are going to be very happy, we can't do an assessment of you because there's no DSD around. So you'd have to wait the 48-hour period. Chair, I think I also want to just make a comment, not that I want to speak on behalf of the traditional National House of Traditional Leaders, but we are also part of processing that bill, and there's a major component on restorative justice in that bill which has a bearing on this one, so I'm just assuming that there is some reason for that which should not be lost sight of, because restorative justice within the traditional justice system has a major bearing for what happens in this bill, which is sort of straddling in some senses. May I then also go into the introductions of the different departments, most of whom form part of the Intersectoral Committee on Child Justice. I have to say it took me a whole of 6 months to get that acronym correct for a bit. And also some of the members who are here come specifically from the legal sections of their departments. I'll start with the South African Police Services, who unfortunately would have to leave us by the end of today because they're before another commission tomorrow. It's Commissioner Geldenhuys, and I would like for them to just put up their hands so that others can recognize them. And then it's also, yes, and Senior, I must say, if you look for those officials who are usually loafing as the media reports, as you would like to think you know, I must point out Commissioner Geldenhuys is recovering from surgery, and he has been here, including putting up the Chapter 5 of sexual offences the day after recovering. So I have to say this is a very committed and dedicated committee. Thank you. On his behalf. And then it's Senior Superintendent Marga van Rooyen. Okay, I've forgotten the name of the colleague. Maybe you want to just state your name. He's from the Ministry of Stats.
My name is Monica Zabo.
Thank you, Monica. Sorry. From the National Prosecution Authority, I must also tender apologies on behalf of Advocate Toko Majukwene, who is the head of the SOCA unit. She's very ill with flu. We met yesterday and she was barely able to cope, so she couldn't make it today or for tomorrow. But we have Advocate Mbakaza, who seems to have stepped out of the room. He was sitting behind me. From the Department of Correctional Services, I have Commissioner Damon, who's leading that delegation. Next to him is the Deputy Commissioner, Johan de Francy, and then Mr. Carol Paxton, I'm from Legal Services, yes, off DCS. Well, you always remind us of the separation of powers, executive. And then, of course, from the Department of Justice, I think you've engaged with us enough by now. It's Dr. Lynette Lowe, Ms. Tanda Skuzana, you know, Lawrence Bassett, the L document, myself, and then Kolya Kok, who's also part of the ISA CJ Secretariat and in charge of Child Justice at the Department. DSC will be joining us a bit later this afternoon, but we will be joined by Connie Gumalo, who is the head of the Crime Prevention Section. We'll also be joined by the DDG, Ms. Nhlapo, later this afternoon and for some parts of tomorrow. Department of Education will join us also a bit later this afternoon, and the Legal Aid Board, unfortunately, will only join us tomorrow. But I think with respect to those two departments, We can't take accountability or responsibility, but I think we will be able to make some responses on their behalf, which you can clarify with them tomorrow.
Priti, I understand, Shireen. If all of them were here at the same time, then the one, you see, the weaknesses in the one state structure can be made up for by another. And if each understands the strengths and weaknesses of the other, cooperatively and collectively, they might be able to better attend. Because the issues are not ideological so much where we differ. I keep repeating, it's not values, or it's about capacity. Where there is some difference also on balancing the rights of children with the needs and interests of the victim, there too it's not ideological. It's about phasing these things in. It's about, it might be slightly differences of values, but essentially it's state capacity. And it's a pity we're not all in, but I understand it's not going to be possible. Let's go for it. Now, can you be more intrusive in the processing of the bill, Carol? Because they know who's here and so on. So, you know, you feel free, Shireen, to say, look, Chair, can we switch to something else? Because we really want to use this period productively. Okay, so let's move on. SAPS, yeah?
They will start with their presentation, and the clauses they're going to deal with, if they could proceed, is clause 7, 12, 18, 28, and 95. And then I think if other members could pick up other clauses that they would like, but these were ones where they had specific recommendations. Also, they want to look at the definition of appropriate adult, and one other aspect which I can't quite remember right now, but Commissioner Felsenet will pick it up.
Can I just make one final intervention about process? You see, Steve Swart, for reasons beyond his control, you know they're a vanguard party, okay? So they comprise the elite. Small party, right? They're more vanguard than the Communist Party. So he could not come last week. Now, he makes very valuable contributions to this committee, and I think Carol and I have agreed, well, I'm speaking on behalf of Carol, that we will allow a certain latitude for Steve to pick up on issues that we may have addressed last week, but we will not go through the whole debate again. Carol and or I and or Lawrence will just summarize for him. So we'll allow some latitude. But before we move on, Lolly, where's Delport? He's not coming. Yeah, it's a pity the DA is not here. Lynn, I must contact. He's in hospital. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, and we said to Carol does useful notes and Banara. So obviously, Steve will have access to you. Why are you looking so bemused? Oh, Christine, by the way, Christine, now, the point is also, Christine, by the way, talk, if you want to show off, Shireen, the final thing, Shireen, if you want to show off about your people, as it were, coming here out of sheer patriotism and duty, can I also show off that, see, poor old Christine is sick, and, you know, she's been hit by this bad bug, as she puts it, right, and she's here at work also, okay? Now, I don't know about Tumisang sitting right next to her, and what the consequences are. But to be frank, I would suggest you drift slightly as far away as possible. And I don't know what Lambertine wants since she's breathing down the back of his neck. But hey, what do I do if people are so committed?
Can I ask if that counts as a facetious comment because Lolly's next to you? And
yes. No, enough now. Let's move on. Yeah. Oh, finally, yes. My boss here says, Mashallah, he's sick. We as the ANC decided our entire contingent won't come. So there are some people who have been excused. And I know Bulalani's got other work to do and he'll roll in and out. And Kurt van der Merwe, needless to say, I mean, this is pretty boring, needless to say, has got other commitments. So, really, can we just take it that Kurt van der Merwe from here now till March 2009 has got other commitments? So we don't table every meeting his other commitments, reasons for not being here. Okay, thank you very much.
Can Karel repeat the clauses she was mentioning?
It was 7. 12, 18, 28, and 95.
Can I just mention, Shireen wasn't here last week. We have dealt with some of those issues, but I think it might be good just to recap last year.
Thank you very much, Chair, and honourable members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to make a presentation. Unfortunately, although I have the presentation on the computer screen here, apparently there's some hiccup with the screens, but you have copies of the presentation, and I propose that I carry on the copy. Before I start, let me just say thank you very much for your kind words regarding my recovery. I have a difficulty. It was an operation in my mouth, so you may experience that my pronunciation is not always correct. So whenever I when I have to use or to express the word delicious, then I have some difficulty. So I won't use the word delicious with your permission.
I promise this is my one and outcome. This is not. No, I have to tell you this. You see, I used to say Penelope instead of Penelope.
Yeah.
So I was talking to somebody and I said, hey man, go and see this nice movie. I said, go and see Apocalypse Now. Now he's English. I'm a student at Warwick University. So you can imagine how preposterous the sound it is. So he goes to the cinema and there's 7 screens, you know, the posters there. So he looks around, he can't work out which movie. So when I meet him 3 days, I said, did you go and see Apocalypse Now? He says, yeah, I don't know what you were getting on about. I went to see something else about card racing and stuff. I said, no, man, this is about Vietnam and so on. Then after a long engagement, he says to me, he says, oh, you mean Apocalypse Now, not Apocalypse Now. But the worst one is this guy. When I see him now in Maritzburg, in the city center, okay, I cannot forget this. This happened about 30 years ago, he's reading from a book, you see, you know, when you read in front of class, which I think in this modern age is regarded as outrageous, right, at one level. So here he sits in front of the class and he's reading. Now, he's such a nice guy, but he reads like in a monotone, you see. So he's reading and he says now, and Jane is obviously very angry, but there's no tone of anger in his voice. You see, she's sort of like just speaking this monotone. So he says, and Jane said, this is pre-posterious. So you couldn't be worse, could you?
Okay. As long as you didn't say Dieter Mein. thank you, Chair. Let me start off by saying that as far as the police service is concerned, really, and I think we've in the past already done this, but I want to reiterate it, that we are really in support of this legislation. We think it is actually overdue in South Africa, and from the side of the police service, we really welcome the efforts of the committee, and we support you in your endeavors absolutely fully. We have a few remarks concerning some of the wording of the bill that we would like to for the committee to consider and look at possible slight and minor amendments, which we believe will also assist us. Let me just explain, Chair, that it is also my primary responsibility to draft the national instructions, which are required in terms of the bill, and it is therefore my job to ensure that members of the police service will be able to implement the provisions of the bill. So therefore, when I look at the provisions of the bill, I look it through those from that perspective to see to what extent this may pose a difficulty and see whether we can perhaps by means of drafting and making slight amendments have make it easier for us to actually fully implement the bill. From our point of view, children should not be dealt with in the criminal justice system as far as possible. So therefore, the ideals and the principles contained in the bill we fully support. If we look at Clause 1, the definition clause, there is a definition for appropriate adult. Now, you will find references to the word appropriate adult throughout the whole Child Justice Bill. And if you look at the existing definition, it basically reads as follows. It says, or a person who is prepared to assist the child and to ask, well, let me just start off. Yeah, I think it's only, I only have a part here. Let me just get the full. The existing definition states, an appropriate adult means any member of a child's family or a guardian of a child or a person who is prepared to assist the child and who has a prior relationship of responsibility towards a child. Now, from the side of the police, looking at what an appropriate adult is, it is important to us for the simple reason that if you look at what should happen to a person in terms of the existing provisions of the bill, that a child below the age of 10 will not be criminally accountable and therefore cannot be dealt with in the criminal justice system, and they will therefore not be arrested or charged with an offense or whatever, but should be dealt with in the social work sphere, and we need to get this child out of the system. So once we are called on from a complainant to say that there was some offense committed and we arrive at the scene as police members and we find that the person who is alleged to have committed the crime is actually a child below the age of 10. Then in terms of the bill, we are supposed to then take the child to the child's home, which we will deal with later on, but we also may hand over the child to an appropriate adult. Now, the question is, what's an appropriate adult? We've just looked at the definition, but we have a bit of a difficulty with that definition itself. Because in order to explain to members of the police service exactly who is a person who is prepared to assist the child, but also has a prior relationship of responsibility towards the child, who are the people that will fall into that category? It becomes rather difficult, especially if you look at the relationship of responsibility, how to explain that to a member of the police service, exactly what that means. Now, we've considered various possible scenarios, saying, well, a teacher of a child is obviously someone who's been in a relationship and a relationship of responsibility towards a child, and you can look at other people as well. But then questions arise. Let us say that we take the child home, the parents are not home, but the neighbors are there. And after having spoken to the neighbors, it appears they know the people very well and their children play together. Can we say that those people have a prior relationship of responsibility towards the child? That's the question that will have to be answered by the police member. And I think it requires a level of discretion which is perhaps not really possible for all our members to exercise. So we would like to give them some clear guidance on exactly what that should be. In order to assist us, we are proposing that we should actually amend that wording, and the part of the wording referring to a person who has a prior relationship of responsibility towards a child, we propose that it should be amended to say who is prepared to assist the child and who has a prior relationship with the child, and then we would also like to add a probation officer to that definition. In other words, we find the child is below the age of 10, we cannot find the parents of the child, there's nobody else that can take responsibility for the child. The question now is, can we actually, what should we do with the child? What in practice must I tell members of the police service, what must they do? And we believe that since this child should not be dealt with in the criminal justice system, a probation officer should be in a position to actually then take control of the child and make appropriate decisions on what should be done with the child in those circumstances. The next one, Chair.
And shouldn't we just deal with each one, Carol?
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Can I
just wanted to add to some of the challenges, perhaps, Chair, before you respond, is one of the number of children used by adults to commit crime could also be, I use the example of a pimp and a, well, I mean, with children, I don't want to use the term sex worker because it's usually not by choice, to perhaps prostitute them further, and other kinds of crimes that could be committed. You could easily come before court and say, I have a relationship, a prior relationship, and I'm taking responsibility. So that's another added dimension as to some of the challenges we would have there. In addition, the Children's Act, and I just can't find my section on it, makes provision for children to be assisted when it comes to their grants. And an assessment process must have taken place to enable them to get those financial grants. And perhaps we need to look at some linkage there to enable us, and maybe not necessarily a probation officer, but someone from social development who would have done the assessment and would get a sense of what that environment is like, to caution against children that are used in those circumstances.
Are you supporting the clause? I just didn't understand your reference to the prostitution. Are you saying that makes it difficult? You use the word this is a challenge, and are you supporting the proposal?
Sorry, I'm challenging the aspect of prior relationship, because if I'm a pimp, I'm using the term crudely now, I have a relationship with the child and I'm responsible. And we wouldn't know that when you come before any of the structures. And the best person to have done that would be somebody from who would have conducted the assessment. And I'm also linking practically to the child grants that must be given in terms of the Children's Act, where we have child-headed households or elderly-headed households. And they can access that grant to manage their lives. And an assessment process must have been conducted there. So somebody would have gone into the environment to see what's happening. So, yes.
What are members saying? Can I just ask, if you add a probation officer to appropriate adult, now the appropriate adult has many responsibilities throughout the bill, and isn't it true that in some of these responsibilities, the appropriate adult has a distinct responsibility from the probation officer? So if you lump them two together, what happens in those cases where their responsibilities are distinct? Because a probation officer may invite an appropriate adult. In that case, he or she will be inviting himself and playing two roles. So is it a question of definition, or is it that in different parts of the bill we can make it clear that in some cases we are referring to a probation officer as part of an appropriate adult, and in other cases we are not? All I'm simply asking is, I'm not familiar enough with the bill to tell, if you put it in the definition cattle, whether now in the content of the bill it might not conflate their respective roles. You've checked all that up.
Chair, let me make a few remarks. First of all, I think with regard to every child, there is not only one appropriate adult. In other words, there may be a range, a number of people that will be regarded as appropriate adults. It means if the definition is changed, a probation officer will also qualify as an appropriate adult. And the idea was that a probation officer will then perform the functions and have the child placed at the place, and then when an assessment is conducted and there should be an appropriate adult present, then the probation officer will identify an appropriate adult, which is another person, and that will be able to perform the function.
We're just sort of discussing between the two of us. Could it not work if you take the wording as you were suggesting, but you take out the or a probation officer, but then you make it clear in clause 7 that you could leave the child in, that you deal with it that way instead of to try to...
That's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I think that's what Eunice is saying.
Chair, we will be happy with that. The fact of the matter is it will solve our problem. But then, please, if the committee should be prepared to adopt the rest of the definition, that will be wonderful. Because otherwise, to try and explain to members of the service what is a prior relationship of responsibility towards a child, it's going to be very limiting, and I can think of millions of different scenarios. Let me give you a simple example. You are called by a supermarket to a shopping mall, and they have arrested the child for shoplifting. Now, you find the child and you establish the child is 9 years old. But then with the child are friends of the family who brought the child together with their children to the shopping mall. Now, in terms of the existing provisions of the bill, it means that we now must take the child home. They do not qualify as appropriate adults, because how can I establish a prior relationship of responsibility in those circumstances? And I think it then becomes a little bit ridiculous to tell them the police will now transport the child back to home, and they cannot do so. I mean, what's the impression that this creates? And I think it's traumatic for the child itself.
Let me just do a more. Yeah. Okay, let's have Bulalani and then Steve.
I'm inclined to agree with the commissioner because in a situation of a rural area, there is more of a sense of community that the child belongs to the community. So you'll find that a lot of people will be considered to be appropriate to be having appropriate prior relationship, because a child in a rural area belongs to the community. And but I would be comfortable if you say, it reads as, or a suitable person who is prepared to assist the child, and or who has a prior relationship with the child, so that it becomes two. Because you might find that I might not be an aunt or an uncle to that child, but I might be prepared out of a conviction, as Combat Karim would be as a communist, to raise that particular child. And I think a person prepared to assist the child should be one requirement, and then and or another person who has a parent relationship.
Chair, there is an important qualification that you've added, that has been added, and that is the word suitable. I don't have a problem with it, but I'd like us just to look at that word, because it makes it narrower, whilst it might well be desirable. How would a policeman decide what is suitable? What criteria would you use? Because that word was not used in the previous definition. It was just a person. So whilst we're broadening it by taking away all responsibility, we're now narrowing it again to add the word suitable. Could you just help us with that?
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin, I agree with the definition there, except that if the child, the safety of the child is very important here, right, and also the whereabouts of the child, right, which means that we need to try and at least regulate how this child is going to be handed over if it is not going to be the parent or the guardian. If it is somebody else, for example, even if the child has a relation of responsibility with this person, then it must be handed over in a particular way. If the person has to sign a document, then the child is in the care of that particular person. I don't know if it is in the clause. I'm not so sure. But I think we need to do that.
Do you want to say anything?
Thank you, Chair. we take the SAPS's points absolutely regarding the narrowest, and we do agree with the broadening it up. We do have reservations, obviously, of regarding appropriate relationships. I mean, but I think that if the police read into appropriate adult, that itself should be an indication that it can't be a negative relationship that the person has with the child. But we are quite concerned about keeping the reference to probation officer within the definition, because that might place an inordinate burden on a probation officer to be at court every single time, because the appropriate adult would essentially be playing the role of a parent or guardian who can't be at court. So does that mean then the probation officer must appear at court with the child every single appearance? So, and if we leave it in the definition section, that might be an unintended consequence of that. So your proposal to remove it from and put it in clause 7, we would support that.
You have a reply. We're going to end this discussion. Carol, you take over from now. Try to pull it together so there's a consensus on the wording. But let's bring it to a halt very soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chair, I just wanted to bring us to one point. It says guardian. Usually it's interpreted to be legal guardian. Perhaps if we could add caregiver, because that could be current, as was the suggestion about in different areas and different cultural setups. So if it's proved that there's a caregiver there, it could be included. And I think when we're saying probation officer, I hear the point about the capacity, but we're not saying probation officer first. It's just an interim period and or. And I must guard against the issue of the prior relationship, because suitability would then just cover all of those grounds without necessarily adding an additional qualification.
Okay, yeah, I think maybe just if SAPS can respond to Bulalani's point and Steve's point and Imam's point. And then, yeah, so that's
Connie, hey?
Yeah, from social development, then I'll give Mr. Marlow an opportunity.
Okay, Chief. Let me respond first of all by saying I understand, and we've already said we agree with the point if Section 7 is amended to include a probation officer. However, remember, and I've stated it earlier on, the fact that a probation officer qualifies as an appropriate adult doesn't mean that that person will remain the appropriate adult. I mean, there are several appropriate adults. So I think one should not make that assumption. As far as the remark of Shireen is concerned regarding the prior relationship, yes, we will support it, that be removed. The suitability will cover it. So that is also fine. We just thought that in interpreting what is a person that is suitable, we would in any event in our directive say that there must have been some link between that suitable person and the child. You cannot take a person who has no connection with the child at all. So that we will cover in our directives in any event. As far as the remark is concerned that the reference to I had some difficulty with the computer, so I did not have time to make notes of everything. There was one remark, sir. You made a remark concerning the responsibility of the community in your culture, in terms of which they take responsibility for children. We understand that, and obviously that means that those people will qualify. But not every member of the community will be somebody that is suitable to actually perform that function at a certain point in time. And the police official must exercise his discretion whether the person is suitable. So that's the only reason why we brought in suitability. Because many people may have a relationship with the child, and many members of the community will also be people that will have that responsibility towards the child, but still, they may not be suitable to actually do it. The example was given of a pimp where a child is used as a sort of a prostitute. That person also has a responsibility towards the child, but he's not definitely not suitable for the person, the child, to be left with him. So these are our remarks. So we are happy if we remove a probation officer. We are happy if the prior relationship is removed, we believe it can be covered by the suitability issue, and we then just request that Section 7 be amended accordingly.
Okay, I have Connie's hand and then Lorette.
Thanks, and apologies for coming late. We thought we were starting at 11. I think I'm happy with the last comment because I was going to comment about probation officer being regarded as a suitable person for a child. Thanks. If it's removed, we are happy.
I just wanted to add that in our discussions on Clause 7, the committee already agreed with SAPS's proposal and where we said we're another responsible person, because in Clause 7.1, it's already a probation officer that you can take the child to. So it's a bit of confusion here. I was confused myself now around the definition. But so we've already agreed on this previously. Okay, so members, are we saying then that we can at least, it'll be a suitable person who is prepared to assist the child? Is that the way that we're going then? Everybody happy? So the prior relationship goes, and the or a probation officer that also goes. Oh, sure. I wanted to find out if the committee made a decision on caregiver, because we said guardian.
Usually, legal guardian.
Yeah, and some children would have caregivers. It's just a natural inclusion.
Yeah, I don't think there would be a problem with that. Okay, then we can move on. So 7.
Thank you, Chair. As far as Clause 7 is concerned, it states that if a police official has reason to believe that a child suspected of having committed an offence is below 10 years, the child may not be arrested and must be taken to the child's home or alternatively to a placement facility. Now, I already alluded to the example of where we are called out from the police services side to attend to a shoplifting charge. You come there, you arrive there, and now you find that the child has been arrested for shoplifting at the supermarket, but the child is now in the care of the friends, the neighbors, whatever, of the family, so the parents are not there. Now, this is too prescriptive. It requires the police to now take the child physically home, and I think that's not necessary. I think it's traumatizing to the child. I think what the police would like to see is an amendment to that part of the section to say that the police must hand over such child to his or her parents or an appropriate adult. So that's our response, our request, which now, in the light of our discussion until now, means including a probation officer. Probation officer must then be added to that. It's in Clause 7.
Sorry, I just need clarity. Are you replacing those words or are you adding those words?
Chair, if you read at Clause 7.1, it says, where a police official has reason to believe that a child suspected of having committed an offence is below the age of 10 years, he or she may not arrest the child and must immediately, but not later than 48 hours, take such child to the child's home. And if the child does not have a home, to a placement facility and must inform a probation officer as prescribed. We are saying we would like to replace that part of the wording by saying that hand over such child to his or her parents or an appropriate adult. In other words, from the word take in this paragraph, from the word take, the words take such child to the child's home, and if the child does not have a home, to a placement facility. We want that part of the section to be replaced by the following words: hand over such child to his or her parents or an appropriate adult. And must then the rest of the section remains. That is our proposal.
What if you can't find a parent or an appropriate adult? Should there not be a provision then to take the child to a placement facility? Because that's now been, what is the likelihood? It's probably unlikely that you wouldn't be able to find an appropriate adult.
We are familiar since 1994 where you either underline or you've just taken the excerpt. But you are not opposed to
as I understand it, Steve, they're not opposed to a placement. They think that should remain. The only words they want removed in that 7-1 are from the end of line 3. Take such child to the child's home. That must be removed and replaced by hand over such child to his or her parents or an appropriate adult. Is that right?
Yes, Chair, but the further part of the section goes on, and if the child does not have a home, to a placement facility.
Yeah, that'll remain.
Now, what we suggest is that take such child to the child's home, and if the child does not have a home, to a placement facility, that whole portion should come out. What we do not want the police to do is we want them to hand the child over to a probation officer who will then be able to identify a placement facility that is suitable for the child and then take the child to that placement facility.
So you're saying hand over the child to or an appropriate adult or a probation officer. One of those three, and that's...
Yeah.
Okay.
Chair, when you look at the Children's Act, it already covers that extensively. They will be able to act in terms of the Children's Act.
I was going to suggest that there is that cross-referencing, but in addition to that, I think one of the challenges that we have practically is a lot of the children end up staying in the SAP facility, and that's where the difficulty is. And we just need to regulate what happens from that point on to the next point.
Do you agree with him that they should enter to the probation officer?
Well, I think we need to be regulated in some way because you can't just hand over. Can you think physically of whether there's a probation officer sitting at every police station and you hand over a group of children with no facility and that person is sitting at the staff facility? So it needs to be regulated, and that's why the cross-referencing is a bit of a challenge. But Connie, I'm looking at Connie to make some response.
Yeah, Connie?
Thanks. I think it's a bit of a challenge because now it means the probation officer will be in every cell police station. When are you going to hand over to the probation officer? But because if the time of arrest, we don't know where and when it will happen, then the police can hand over a child to a suitable parent or caregiver. And then if really there's a problem, it's during the day, and then the probation officer can be there to assist.
Chair, I think there's some misunderstanding. We don't have probation officers at police stations. They will never be there. We don't want them there. What the idea is that if you find a child below the age of 10, the child is not arrested. You cannot arrest the child. You must do something with the child. You cannot say to the child, carry on and do whatever you want to. But now you must do something with the child. We say you must hand over the child to the parents of the child. If the parents are not there, you can hand over the child to a suitable adult. If there is no suitable adult to whom you can hand over the child, you are going to take the child to a probation officer. The probation officer will not be there at the scene. The probation officer will not be at the police station. You take the child to a probation officer. The probation officer, in terms of the Children's Act, can deal with the child. This child, in terms of the old legislation, qualifies as a child in need of care.
Do you think, why are we asking the police to do the work of the probation officer? No, I understand you. I'm just not sure why Shireen is so not forthcoming with her view and others. What's the problem, Shireen? What is
my challenge is, when you hand over to the probation officer, physically, where are they located? You're going to have a child, you're going to take them to the probation officer. SAPS is going to move that child because they don't want them in the facility. The facilities of police cells are not appropriate for children. There's clarity on that. But now when you take that child, if a probation officer at 11 p.m. in the night, where is that person located? And that's the issue, that when you take out the placement facility, and I think that's what I'm looking at Connie to say.
Probation officer at 11 at night. That's my question to
and
Lorette.
That's what I'm looking at Connie for, to give her a response.
Lorette, Jackie.
All I wanted to add there is that the provision says within 48 hours. So if it's at 11 at night, the child will have to be kept. I mean, it's just practical, and it's already in the provision.
It's already
so
in the bill,
it's
yeah.
not like you have to find a probation officer now, 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's helpful, Lorette. Could you come in faster next time? Because you know this bill so well. You've memorized it, obviously. Anne or Jackie?
I'm not sure if Lorette has in mind there that the child would have to be held in a police cell. Is that what you were thinking, Lorette? This is a child who cannot be arrested in law below the age of criminal capacity. So, therefore, I support the idea that you have to also have, or if you cannot find a probation officer, in a placement facility, child and youth care centre, and then the police would, as a last resort, drop a child off there. That way we can make sure children as young as this don't end up spending any time in
police. It says you take it to a probation officer. If you can't find a probation officer, then you hand over the child to a placement facility. And why did you take so long to say that? Really wasting our time, yeah.
Sorry, Chair, but the thing is when you the issue is when you hand over to the probation officer, because you're going first to the probation officer, is that person going to be physically sitting somewhere? And where they're located at 11 at night when you find this 10-year-old or 9-year-old? And that's the challenge that I'm having.
Yeah, but they presumably have got a list of probation officers, and you found them on their cell numbers. And if you're watching Law and Order and something, you just got to stop and go to them.
That's not the case, and maybe Connie wants to intervene and say...
But before you do, Bulalani, quickly, Imam.
To counter with Sharon, she's arguing as if the probation officer is the only route. Of which the first route is to take this child to his or her parents. That is the first route. And only then you go to an appropriate adult. After that, if you can't get an appropriate adult, then it is only then you go to the probation officer or to this facility that Anne has been talking about. So let us not argue as if it's an only route.
Sorry it took so long to say it, but anyway, Imam? Oh, yeah, I can't hear you.
I didn't have a response here to my point is, if we come to an appropriate adult,
yeah,
right, which is not the mother or the, you know, a relation of the child,
yeah,
the appropriate, you see, how do we hand over the child to such a person? You just drop the child there and leave?
Chair, yes, that is something that will be, I don't think it's something to be regulated in the bill itself. This is something we will deal with in the national instruction. It will come to this committee, and this committee will be able to consider it. And we will amend it from time to time as may be necessary in order to make it as practical as possible.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I just want to indicate that we support the idea of them looking for a suitable parent or caregiver. But then, before the facility, that child is so young, they cannot just drop the child into the facility. They must get a probation officer who will arrange, because the child is placed through the court to a place of safety.
So the sequence is now being agreed to, is that correct?
No.
Okay, so the last thing is a placement facility before which is a probation officer, and the rest is as it is in the law. Are we agreed? Is there any problem? Are we going to draft it like that? Thank you, let's move on. The next one then is Clause 18, arrest.
Yes, Chair. At the moment, Clause 18 basically states that the child may not be arrested. By the way, Chair,
sorry? No, right now we're dealing only with the SAPS stuff. Yeah, okay, but... Yeah, when you mentioned the clauses, you mentioned 12. Yeah, oh, I see. Good point. Where's 12? You got no amendments to 12.
Chairperson, I have been informed by Shireen that the committee has already agreed to the proposals that we made, because we made a written submission to the committee.
And we agreed to it. Okay.
You already agreed to it? Okay, that's why I'm not alluding to it now.
Okay, right, okay. We apologize for irritating you. 18?
Chair, to come back to Clause 18, a child may not be arrested for an offence referred to in Schedule 1 unless there are compelling reasons justifying the arrest. Now, Chairperson, once again, I want the committee to please put up their spectacles and look through the eyes of myself having to draft a national instruction for ordinary members of the police, constables out there. What am I going to tell them? What are compelling reasons justifying the arrest? Now, my proposal is, Chair, that we make it a little bit easier by stating that a police official, that he may not be arrested unless a police official has reason to believe that the child does not have a fixed residential address, will continue to commit offences unless he or she is arrested, or poses a danger to any person, and then carries on with paragraph 18.1b. In other words, we look at clause 18.1a, which at present reads as follows: there are compelling reasons justifying the arrest. From the police services side, we propose that that part of the section be replaced by this part stating, in other words, part A is replaced by an A which has a Roman numeral 1, 2 and 3. In other words, the first one is, does not have a fixed residential address, will continue to commit offences unless he or she is arrested, poses a danger to any person, or then the existing B, the offence is in the process of being committed. That's our proposal.
Another option would be to make B rather Roman numeral 4. Instead of separating it as a separate B, unless there's a specific reason, Lawrence, for that. Why don't we just simplify it?
Exactly.
Unless it's a different category of thing, let's lump it here. It's a different example of the same thing. Eh?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I just want to remind the committee that we did deal with this, I think it was last week, and I think there was a proposal that we must sit down with Anne and do this.
Okay. Basically, who wants to say what, Lloyd?
Yeah, I just also, we've already, when we discussed this last time, we thought this should be dealt with in the national instructions, because as SAPS already explained here, they will be amending the national instructions from time to time. So say they decide there's more grounds, wouldn't it be better suited there? Because I saw my notes last time said the committee agreed that it should be in terms of 95B Roman 2, where they draft the national instructions, that you can then say what these compelling reasons are. But that's where the committee...
Can we also ask Vanara and Christine to be a bit more activistic? Because on our side for Parliament, they are meant to be checking. You are monitoring them. You can't trust the executive, please. And your Parliament, you represent 48 million people. Who do they represent? The Minister and Deputy Minister, right? You represent 48 million people and the DG. Sorry? Yeah, but in this context, they are representing the government. We are representing the Parliament. So we have a lot of more power than they have. So, in short, let's not discuss that now. Otherwise, I'll come forth with five anecdotes. The fact is, you know, I mean, I really feel I'm being serious. Christine may not be well, but Vanara, can you intervene and say, look, we agreed to that as well. Laura's doing that job very well, thank you. But can I raise something? In this committee, I think we more or less agreed, knowing its values. We haven't discussed it. We don't feel that certain things should be left to the executive or any other State Department by way of regulations and instructions. 14 years later, we've grown the wiser. As far as possible, and the previous speaker, by the way, felt very strongly about this, Finney Jinwala, that Parliament should not just allow ministers to regulate. Even if we say regulations will be brought to Parliament, often we're unable to do much about it. So I think we can do both, Laurette, what you're saying and what's here. Meaning, we say something like 1, 2, 3, and Roman numeral 4B becomes that, and then we add, and it's taken further, I don't know, you'll find the words, in the instructions, etc. But for now, what is the view of members and anybody else here on Roman numeral 1, 2, and 3 replacing A for now? On that, Steve?
At the moment, we've got a broader sense of compelling reasons, and I hear the Commissioner would like to limit it or expose on that, but maybe one should say compelling reasons, including, which doesn't limit, because you might have other reasons. So that gives guidance.
Please, what more can you ask for?
We're happy to.
You're agreeing to, the police are agreeing with that. Wow, okay.
Yes.
So then, can we agree on it like that? Can we agree on that? Yes, Ed?
I did raise this before when we discussed it, but I'm a little bit worried about the no fixed residential address. The other two I don't have a problem with, but... You know, I'm just concerned that street children then will always be arrested because they don't have a fixed address.
Chairperson, the effect, well, I think it's a very generalized statement to say that street children will then always be arrested. Some street children are actually in facilities where they have overnight facilities and where they receive some food. And they are still three children. So then they have a fixed residential address. But a street child who is living under a tree or under a bridge somewhere will in those circumstances be arrested. The question we must answer to ourselves is the police service finds this person is committed, you have reasonable grounds to believe that he's committed an offense. If you don't arrest the child, what will happen to the child? He will go back to his bridge. But he's not going to stay under that bridge because he knows we know he's there. So now he's going to move to another bridge. And when will we find him again? That's the principle.
Chair, yeah, I just wanted to raise the point of we need to be also mindful that we can't respond to all of the social issues in this child justice bill. The programs that DSD would present at some point gives you a sense of the prevention components which were not in the Children's Act before to the extent that it's been deliberated on. So one has to be mindful of some of the realities that we have without going against the principles of we would like to deal with children in a particular way. It just poses major difficulties with fixed residential address and the numbers of children practically as to what do we do then.
Yeah, I've been thinking about members is that we don't know the Children's Act well enough. And, you know, ideally, if somebody can give us a summary tomorrow or today or whenever. Yeah. Okay, basically, what are we going to do? It's to do with Anne's question about fixed residential address. My sense is a substantial number of street children do not have a fixed residential address in the sense we know it. And they'll invariably get arrested. The point may be that it's better for them in this sort of situation than going under a tree in the middle of winter and whatever. But now what do we do? Why are you smiling, Connie? Since you're smiling, will you comment? Or share us your...
Not now, Che.
Not now, okay. You can tell me over lunchtime. But quickly, what is the answer? We're running out of time, members. Anne, have you got an answer?
No, but I actually do think that, you know, standing alone as it does, that, in other words, one doesn't have other reasons why you shouldn't arrest. It's nothing to do with the offence. It's nothing to do with the age of the child, except that the child mustn't be below 10 as we have it now. And then one focuses on something like address, lack of an address, which the child has no control over. I think it might actually be bordering on being unconstitutional. But perhaps the department can consider the constitutionality of it.
I tweak it a bit where there's some, you don't want the police to have discretion, I know your point, something about tweaking it and maybe saying that in instructions it will be set out more fully or whatever. I don't know, but can't we tweak it a bit? Because there is a sense in which surely Roman numeral 1 does have some value.
Chair, if I may come in here, remember clause 18 is an exclusionary clause. In other words, it says the police may not arrest. And then it says unless. In other words, it means if those circumstances are present, the police may arrest. Now, the police may arrest people for many offences in South Africa. We are not arresting everybody who commits an offence. We exercise a discretion, and that's well known to the police service. All that we are saying is the circumstances where we are prohibited from exercising this discretion. In this section 18.1, it says only in those two circumstances can you consider whether to arrest or not. And all that we are saying is that is too limiting. We would like to extend that because then you can consider, not necessarily will arrest, but can consider taking into account all the other factors that we normally take into account with regard to every arrest.
Particularly, I don't have an answer. Carol, you've got to rescue us here. Or Bulalani or somebody. I don't know.
No, I see Anne nodding. So I think we're moving sort of, I think we're pretty much on the same page now. I see Shireen nodding direct.
Questioning if we add an and to the Roman numeral 1 does not have and will continue, or trick it in that sense, where you're creating the sense of this possibility of an offence being committed, or am I off too prescriptive?
Okay, yeah, and
I think I take the last point that was made about the fact that, you know, it is in any case already quite limited. So I think that maybe one in the standing orders one could develop a little bit more by explaining that a shelter here's a fixed address. That would then at least save the children who live in shelters. And I think if that's done, then it's a bit more nuanced.
Okay. So, yeah, Shereen? Sorry, I was going to add from a practical point of view that one of the things we're embarking within the ISCCJ for all frontline staff would be a great deal of training, because it's a mindset issue. And I know Ant's raising these points from how I know our police service and frontline officials generally operate. And that part of their training would look at the whole background and understanding of children's rights, especially with the Children's Act, which we haven't done ever before for all frontline officials. And I think when that mindset begins to commence, it will then also have the effect of responding appropriately from a preventative aspect as well. That will be in the, that is in the pipeline and will take some time, but I think those directives, etc., will then still support that in some way. So I wanted to just put that was something we embarking on, a major campaign for all frontline across the department.
So you would have the training and the sort of mindset, and then you would have in your standing orders the issue that Anne raises. So I think we're fine in terms of that. Okay. Imam.
I tend to lean in favor of that side. That number one, that would have a fixed residential address. In terms of justification for arrest or no arrest. To me, it doesn't make any sense, really. I mean, there cannot be in law, right, that if you haven't got an address, that you can be arrested or can't be arrested. Certainly, you can be detained if you continue to commit an offense or if you pose a danger, you see. If we leave that out altogether, right, I don't think it'll make any difference, really. You know, I think we should leave it out altogether.
Chair, let me explain. You must understand that we are now talking about the child who committed the crime. In other words, that child will now feed into the criminal justice system provided for into this bill.
So there's an allegation.
Of course.
It's an allegation at this stage.
Of course, Jeff. But the point is, we are now moving where this child will now be taken into the child justice system provided for in this bill. But if you cannot find the child again, how are you going to do that? And if you must have some place where to go and look for the child if you do not arrest the child. So the only question is, if the child does not have a fixed residential address where you can find him again, it means that that child is gone.
Steve, if that answers your question, the thing is, where do you find the child again to take the child to court? And the point that we've also said now is, if you have, for example, night shelters where children stay, then that would be considered as having an address. So,
it's one of the accepted practices of criminal justice, I think, in terms of criminal procedure. After one of the purposes of arrest is to ensure attendance at a trial. So I think if you see it in that context, I agree with Imam that there are certain concerns, but you've got to see it in the context of what is the purpose of arrest, one of which is to ensure attendance at a trial. So I think that's why traditionally you've always had bail applications. It's a huge issue. Is there a fixed address or not? Will the person attend trial? So I fully appreciate the Commissioner's concerns that the person might not attend trial. And I think that's one of the reasons.
But for all intents and purposes, the child will be gone. There's no way you're going to get that child to court. But anyway, Imam, you...
I still have concerns here, Basin. There are other ways and means, I'm sure, and we should find other ways and means for children particularly, right, in order to make sure that they do attend a trial, if there's going to be a trial, see. But to arrest a child for not having a fixed address, to me, sounds unconstitutional. If that doesn't sound right.
Laurette, and then, Anne, maybe just the point that you made prior to when you had your hand up the last time, just repeat that maybe. I think that might actually solve Imam's problem. But Laurette and then another, who was it, Connie? Okay, so Laurette and then Anne and then Connie.
Yes, I just wanted to remind Mr. Solomon that we're going to rewrite this section in any case. So you start from the written notice, because this is part of a whole section where Section 18 fits in. It's part of Chapter 3, and we're going to arrange it in such a way that arrest is always the last option, but there will always be arrest. But it will be all the other options that we've worked through last week. So there'll be the written notice, there'll be the summons, there'll be... So all of those are there, and the last option is always arrest. But so we're going to rearrange those sections in any case, but yes, but arrest will always be there, but it's going to be the last option.
And sorry, just maybe just repeat that, because I think that will satisfy Imam, then Connie, and then Bull.
Well, of course, my instinct is the same as Imam Solomon's, that it does, on the face of it, it looks like it could be interpreted as being unconstitutional. But Commissioner Feldner has pointed out that already one's working in a very narrowly defined area here. Very few children can be arrested even if you do keep one in. And Commissioner Feldner has seemed to give an undertaking that in the national standing orders, or whatever they're called, those directives, it would explain that fixed residential address includes children living in shelters, which would then leave us with very few children who would get arrested on this. So in the light of that, it kind of ameliorates its apparent unconstitutionality. That's about the best that I can do.
Okay, Connie and then Bulelani.
I just want to add, I'm thinking that a child with no physical address might be a child in need of care, because really, if you're not in a shelter, you don't have a physical address, you might be a child in need of care. So that's where also the probation officer should chip in to really assist.
No, I'm very covered, but I'm just concerned about 4A and 4B, that within 24 hours of arrest, the police officer must inform the probation officer, but it doesn't say what the probation officer must do after having been informed, both A and B.
Okay, let's just hear from Connie. I think that's somewhere else in the bill, in the children's, it's covered. But Connie, just explain Bulelani's point.
4A and B. I think when the child is handed over to a probation officer, it's purely maybe if the child is not assessed for assessment also to determine a suitable maybe placement, or if it's a child in need of care, to convert to a children's court inquiry and so on.
Yeah, Shireen. What we've agreed to in terms of monitoring it from the child ISCCJ is that we'd have these in the regulations or somewhere, a note where I sign over to the probation officer, so the responsibility and accountability is moved to the next line in the process. So that would then make sure that I don't just give you the child, that you then now have handed over SAPS and you take your responsibility as the next department. It's just not in the bill, because,
yeah,
I mean, it's too much.
It becomes a social development
absolutely
issue.
It's just to shift the accountability to the next person, because we don't have that at the moment.
Then it makes the proposal of Commissioner to be much more reasonable, to be much more acceptable in that case.
Lawrence?
Thanks, Chair. This is what we canvassed last week as well, the 24-hour period. I think while we've got the representatives from SACHA, the question was raised, is 24 hours feasible?
Chair, yes. That is a question which is impossible for the South African Police Service to answer. Because I can assure you, we render a 24-hour service, 365 days a year, in a leap year, 366 days. So the fact of the matter is we will have policemen there. Whether it will be possible and feasible for the Department of Social Development to have probation officers available is a different question. That's a question that the Department of Social Development will have to answer. Later on, we are making a proposal which will assist in that regard, regarding Section 95, where we propose that they must provide us with the contact particulars of the people, so that we will be able to contact them. But if the Department of Social Development will have people available, no problem. We'll see to it that they get this.
Yeah, okay, so for the time being, we're agreeing that it stays impending what we hear from Social Development later on. And then the other thing, I think, Mr. Bassett, that we also discussed is we said that SAPS must notify somebody, and I think we added the words either the parent or the appropriate adult, and I think we had a discussion about inserting after only if after a diligent search no such person could be found. Do members remember that we... Does that ring a bell?
Wasn't that for the parents rather than the probation officer?
Yeah, no, that was for the... But the steps that SAPS had to take in order to try to find... I think it was relating to sub 3.
Yeah, sub 3. Right, yes. Chair, we... And I've also got a note of that. It was suggested that the way the circumstances permit should come at the end of paragraph D, but it shouldn't be. We shouldn't use those words. It should be notify the child's parent or appropriate adult of the arrest, except where exceptional circumstances dictate otherwise. Something along those lines.
Yeah. Now maybe if you could speak to the colleagues from SAPS and just give us sort of various options for wording, but I think we've pretty much agreed, Lorraine.
There was actually another option that I have here, is the Lawrence option. That was the one option, and then the other one was to use paragraph 4B's wording also there to repeat that.
Yeah, I've also got 4B.
Yeah. So that's the two options.
Yeah.
Chairperson, yes, as far as we are concerned, obviously we support the fact that the child's parent or an appropriate adult must be notified. But obviously there will be circumstances where this will be difficult. And that is why we support the initial proposal, namely that where circumstances permit be allowed in. If you want to have more clarity and to limit that, we can talk about the wording and we are prepared to work together with Lawrence in that regard.
Yeah, I think you can possibly bring us a few options later on and then we can look at one or two options too. But I think, I mean, on principle we're in agreement. Okay, can we move on, members, to clause 26?
Okay, Chair, we were informed, we were unfortunately not here, but we were informed that there was a discussion in the committee concerning the roadmap for placements of for the placement of a child in the criminal justice system. And clause 26 specifically refers to this, and he then gives a list of placement facilities, if we might call it that, in the order of preference. In other words, first of all, the first priority or the first preference is that a child must be placed in a placement facility. That is, of course, provided that introductory part, and we should perhaps read it. It says, after due consideration of the options for release of a child in terms of part 1, a decision is made that the child is to be detained or is to remain in detention. The following options regarding placement of the child must be considered subject to 27 and 29. The first option, placement facility. We support that. The second option, placement in a police cell. The third option, placement in a prison. Now, Chairperson, I must with all due respect say that with all the respect for the South African Police Service and the Department of Correctional Services, obviously neither of them are preferable. But what we would like to see is a change in the order. In other words, we would prefer a child to go to a prison before the child is kept in a police cell. Children, the Department of Correctional Services, their facilities normally have a number of children. So therefore, when you take a child and you decide that the child must be detained and there's no placement facility, the next step will be the child must go to a prison, where there is other children and the child will not be alone. We have in South Africa 1,200 to 1,100 police stations. Each of them have a few holding cells. Now you arrest a child at a particular police station. The child must be kept separate from adults, separate from other children of a different gender. And now you have a situation where it is quite likely that a child will be alone in a police holding cell, which in itself is definitely not what one would prefer to have. So therefore we say, if the child cannot be placed in a placement facility, then the next step would be that the child must be taken to a prison, and if that is not possible, then as an absolute last resort, the child may be kept in a police holding facility, cell facility.
Well, that's the whole, we had a lengthy debate on that, and I think the majority, I think, of people were leaning towards saying that a police cell should be, I mean, you're obviously a placement facility is first prize. Then a police cell because it's closer to the parents and to the community and parents will have access to children, and that was why it would be secondly a police cell and lastly a prison. But, without sort of necessarily having to reopen the whole discussion, but maybe just let's hear people on that again. Yeah.
A general observation, I'm addressing the NGOs in particular. Again, my weekend didn't pan out the way it did, and I haven't done the work I should have done. But having read the department's written text, I actually feel they have stronger replies to the NGOs than comes across in their verbal submissions. And I want to draw attention to some of these things about how there are quite significant differences of interpretation of what the UN Committee on the Rights of Children says. And also on Section 29 of the Correctional Services Act, I only discovered last night it's referring to unconvicted children and so on. But that doesn't come across in the NGO submissions. I'm not saying anybody is doing anything wrong. But it also, there's the department white paper. Let's not discuss it. All I'm simply saying is my feeling at the moment is the department has a stronger case than is presenting itself here in the discussion. And we will find that stronger case, but it will take us longer. It's better they deliver it. But let me just raise something. It struck me only last night, and Jackie, that I was agreeing with the sequence we agreed on, a cell and then a prison. But then you see, if children are there, and for them to get education while they're there, which I think we all agree on. In fact, our visit to Portsmouth last year, the report that we wrote said, it's outrageous that awaiting trial children aren't allowed certain programs and education and other facilities that a convicted child is allowed. Now, I just wanted to ask a related question. I'm throwing it out for Anne and them to respond in, but you might want to say that. See, if we put people in a police cell, surely it's more difficult for them to get access to education than in a prison, or these youth care things and so on that the prisons themselves are now talking about.
Jay, let me be absolutely clear then, if I haven't been clear enough before. When we have said that we don't think it's possible to put a child in a prison rather than a police cell, we are only talking about the first 48 hours prior to the first appearance in court. We don't think that a police cell is a good place for children. We know all too well that it's not. But practically, we've explained, and this is what we debated at length before, that it's not really possible to place a child in a prison. It's not done ever. Adults, for example, are never placed in a prison prior to the first appearance. I'm not sure whether Commissioner Geldenhuys is making his comments in the context of pre-first appearance detention even. He'll have to tell us whether he is or not. We're absolutely clear that Section 29 only applies to children awaiting trial, but it covers both the first 48 hours and the period between then and when the children are convicted. In our progress in the bill so far, we've got up to Section 33. We haven't yet got to detention of children in a sentenced capacity. So up until now, we've only been debating pretrial detention of children. So if there has been any confusion, I don't think it's been... yeah. So that's it. So perhaps Commissioner Geldenhuys can explain to us whether he believes that it's possible or appropriate for a child to be held in a prison prior to first appearance in the first 48 hours, because one of the provisions in the bill proposes that should be the case. We argued very strenuously previously that it shouldn't be, and I think the Department of Correctional Services, but they're here to speak for themselves, agreed with us that it wasn't logistically possible.
Chairperson, If one wishes to draw a distinction between the first 48 hours and the rest of the waiting trial period, it will be fine. Preferably, from the South African Police Service side, we do not want a single child in our police holding cells ever. Then we will be happy. Unfortunately, the reality dictates otherwise. So there will be circumstances where we will have children in our custody, but we prefer to minimize it as far as possible. Correctional facilities, prisons, actually have people, trained staff, that can provide medical assistance, that can provide psychological assistance, not only schooling and education, but also people who are trained as social workers to provide the counseling services that may be necessary. From the side of the police, that is impossible. to provide at a police holding cell. And therefore, our request that the order be changed. Preferably, a child should not be in a police cell, but if necessary, and there's no place at the prison, fine, let him go to a police cell. It doesn't mean that a person cannot be detained for a very short period of time until arrangements have been made for the child to be transferred to a prison. That is fine. That process we will follow.
Okay, I must also bring to the committee's attention, and perhaps we didn't deal with that sufficiently, is there's an interim national protocol for the management of children awaiting trial. It's this book which we're currently revising, and that's the protocol that is adhered to by all of the government departments within the agencies, and we're also now obviously revising it to conform with the Child Justice Bill, and that is managed rather tightly, I think, with our awaiting trial committee. So over and above what we've put in, because we assumed it was read on the departmental responses and deliberated on, I think that needs to be taken in context. We'll also leave a copy with that, which I think we omitted to do previously.
I would just then, while we have SAPS here, also ask them, because since they now mentioned that they can't provide those things, we had that big debate last week where the committee made us insert in Clause 28, psychological as well, and also that suggestion by the Child Justice Alliance to add in there adequate food, water, access to reading materials, adequate clothing, which we said will drop in the committee, and sufficient blankets and bedding, and adequate exercise. But all those others were still going to maybe go in, except that's in Clause 28, and I would just, from the brief comment here, I'm sure they're not going to agree with that.
Chairperson, from the police services side, we cannot provide psychological services. It's out of the question. We don't have the people or the ability to provide that. Medical assistance, what happens if ever a child who is in detention of the police service, whether in the police holding cell or en route to the police station or en route to the court, whenever a child is injured, our existing system processes that people must follow is to take that child to a medical practitioner as soon as possible and receive proper treatment for the child. If necessary, the child will be admitted to hospital. If not necessary, medication will be provided. We have a whole process of how to deal with medication, but psychological counseling, that is not provided for in our existing
system. Clarify, no one's asking you to provide psychological counseling. You see, a child that's detained could be suffering severe stress because of the trauma of being detained, right? And often it may well be that the psychological duress the child is under is more damaging to the child in the long term than any physical injury, which you can recover from, maybe. And even a physical injury has psychological dimension that may persist. So the aim was, you can obviously see a child hasn't got any scars or marks or wounds or cuts or abrasions, but he's severely traumatized, then you have to take the child to the hospital. The hospital will have a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or you might have to take the specialist Fort Napier Hospital in Maritzburg, for example, or whatever. That was the aim. It wasn't that you must yourself provide it any more than you must have a doctor in each police cell, police station. And we can tweak that, but it seems to me we should not retreat from that unless there's an overwhelming argument that can be won by your side and whoever wants to argue that way. Shireen, are you going to help us? Oh, Lawrence, you were here last week.
Yeah. Chair, perhaps I should just, so we place it in proper context. The clause says if any complaint is received from a child during an arrest or while in detention relating to an injury sustained by such child or observation, this must be recorded and reported to the station commander, who must ensure that the child receives immediate and appropriate medical treatment. At the moment, the clause is limited to physical injury. That's where the focus is. And the committee has requested us to consider adding to physical injury, psychological, we've still got to come up with some proper wording, psychological stress. And my fear here is that if you add psychological stress there, then you must go for medical attention, and that medical attention, I'm sure every child, as I said the other day, every child that's in a police cell suffers from psychological stress, and you're going to have huge,
lawyers, right? But
we're not talking of the very notion of being arrested is stressful. So that would mean every child goes to a therapist, right? Then people might even commit offenses to go to a therapist, right? Obviously, we don't mean that. You know what we mean. Put the words, let's not rehash the whole discussion. Come with wording that is pragmatic and sensible, that is tight and rigorous, that doesn't require all children to be taken. But children that are obviously mentally disturbed, let's put it that way. You can't just say, hey, there's no scars on the person. You know, we're not going to do anything. Shooting help, please, man.
I was going to suggest that we put it in the interim national protocol, because what we're looking at in the interim national protocol is juveniles deprived of their liberty, the international standards.
We're worried about
all of
that. That's not legislatively mandatory. And we don't like that, because often it never happens. Somebody told me about the equality courts the other day, and said, hey, Eunice, you want to go that direction? Let me tell you what's happening. In the equality courts, there's all these regulations, nothing's being done. Now, for example, we may get a minister next year who's fairly conservative on these issues, because we're a broad front ANC, okay? You've got extreme conservative, very radical. And you may get a minister who might be indisposed, let me put it this way, to the ethos of this bill, and will not act. So we don't want that. We want Parliament to, as far as possible, limit the number of instances and the extent to which the executive prescribes through regulation and or policy documents. We have no control over that. So in short, help us to sort this matter out, please.
I was just going to say that there's a, and the reason why I'm not giving you a complete response now, my second point was going to be is there is a major policy conference in the next 2 weeks between the Department of Justice and the Department of Health, because it's recognized that mental health in the criminal justice system is a major problem, worse so for children. So once we've got that prescript coming through, we would in the meanwhile, whilst this interim recess is there for us, come up with the right kinds of language.
And
those two newspaper articles show us why it's dangerous to allow psychological stress to go unnoticed. Because if these children are committing suicide in police cells, then we must ask ourselves, why wasn't anyone noticing the state that they were in and so on? All this Section 28 does is it says that if the police see, just as if they saw an open wound, they must take them to a doctor. If they see that they're crying and shuddering in the corner, you take them to the doctor. The doctor gives them a Valium until such time as they can get proper psychological counseling in order to minimize the harm. And the only other requirement is that they then must have a system of reporting that so they know how many of the children in their care were suffering from that. I don't think it's a big demand.
It's a big demand either. And also, let's be frank, right? 14 years later, we know the way state functions operate. You interpret these things in the most convenient way. You know, like municipalities are asked to consult over the IDPs. Some of them, you know what they do? They put it on a website knowing that only 5% of the public will look at the website. Okay, so they got away. Legally, nobody's got the energy or time to challenge them. That if you want to do rape policies, you don't do it on a little website. Consult. So you have ways and means of wriggling around, okay? And our job is to actually monitor you. So you'll get away with it. Don't worry. You'll do nothing, probably, if you don't want to. But if you're a human being, not you, I don't mean you, literally you, I mean the collectivity that is the South African police force. I'm talking of the post-apartheid area, my police force, not the apartheid police force. I know what they like. I know them everything. I know in my street what happens. And the police station is just, Anne would know, I'm in Birkett Road, there's a police station at the corner there. If I tell you what happened on last Saturday in the middle of the day and how long it took for the police to come, okay, let's not discuss that. So in short, we can do it, we're not discussing this, we are now ruling, right? The ruling is there will be a sensitive, sensible, pragmatic formulation that takes account of undue psychological stress on which everybody has to act, okay? That's settled. The wording is between Carol, who's our expert on these things. Carol Foss can become an expert in everything, as she'll soon discover. The lawyer, Lawrence, the policy person, Shireen, and Jackie. They can choose somebody. Steve, you got something to say to help? Yeah, good. Thank you very much. We're not discussing it again. Yeah, we're not talking about neglect last week. We said neglect is too generic. We're talking about psychological stress. Undue psychological. I can't find the right word. A lay person like me talks undue and obvious and seeable psychological stress that is likely to lead to a person committing suicide or being damaged for the rest of their life. If I was writing an essay, I would do it like that. You're the lawyer, not you. I mean, long as you're the lawyer, you do it in one sentence. Yeah. Oh, you're also a lawyer. Yes, you're a lawyer. Right. And
Chair, just before we move to section 26, clause 26,
oh, you're
I wonder if we shouldn't say, where we mention police cell, make it clear that we're only talking about the first 48 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. You've done it for me. That's what I understood. We'll make it very clear we're talking about the first 48 hours. Thank you very much. Now, can we be clear that in respect of the other issues we discussed, our friends from the police, you were not here last week, but we said we will expect the police to ensure that the child has food and water, all of these things you are meant to do anyway. So you can't say, Shireen, that we're going to... We took out adequate clothing because we decided now then you'll be in trouble and say you don't have a fund for it and so on. But blankets you have to give them and so on. So on that we're not retracting. That's going to be there. We're dropping out the words adequate clothing. But if they come at the last moment with something that's very mild about that, you know, something like adequate clothing or consult Anne Skelton and Jackie Gallinetti, that's fine. We'll live with that. Okay, thank you. Let's move on. 28.3, detention register.
Chair, just before you move on, I just want to get clarity in my own mind. Has a decision now been taken to leave the order?
Yes, the way we did it, yeah. Except we're referring specifically to 48 hours, and if that's not clear, let's put it in. That's Lawrence's job. Okay, thank you. 28.3, please.
Yes, Chair. 28.3 specifically refers to...
Sorry, Imam.
Yeah, fine. I mean, it's centered on that side also. The police house should be last, so that we don't leave the order as it is. The order we have at police is the order. Yeah.
I agree exactly with you.
Yeah.
Sorry if you misunderstood us. Yeah. 28.3. Sorry? What? Yeah, for the first part. What is he saying? No.
But I understand that the prison is a better option than the police cell because there are facilities there. Right?
For the first 48 hours, we are saying that the police cell, because even adults, is that right, Anne? Even adults in the first 48 hours, they are not taken to a prison.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first 48 hours, the sequence that we agreed to last week when you were here is the sequence we'll follow for the first 48 hours.
I understand the chairperson.
Yeah.
But according to the gentleman over there, right, if the child, for example, you know, has a psychological problem or is injured or needs some care, that care facility is not at the police station at all. They haven't got the facilities. That is why the person recommended a prison. Second.
Covered later. Sorry, can you just help? Can somebody, Carol, can you summarize better than I will?
I don't know. Maybe correctional services can help us. I mean, we had this discussion last week, and Lauren.
No, we don't open the debate.
Yeah, but I mean, it's. That's what we say. Placement facility, police cell, prison. We've said that a police cell is a better option than a prison because it's only for 48 hours. The police cell is near the family. It's easier for families to access. It's closer to communities. And because it's only for 48 hours, that is why we're saying rather a police cell and a prison is a last resort.
Aren't we saying, Carol, that we are not expecting the police station to have a full-time doctor, a cardiologist, a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and so on. Even Sweden doesn't have that. If a child is in that first 48 hours, which maybe the experts will tell us, the most stressful period, if the child is mentally imbalanced, who is about to commit suicide in a police cell, then surely they can't say, hey, the poor fellow died, but he didn't have a single pimple on his nose, therefore we didn't act. They must know now that if it's the child's stress, they must take the child to the local police station. I don't think we disagree. I'm sure you're going to agree with us. We're not communicating clear enough. And the job, by the way, resides ultimately with the two of us. If any member is not following, it's our job to repeat and explain so that nobody sanctions a clause here that he or she has not understood. So I apologize on my behalf. I'm not explaining. And I'm speaking too fast, maybe. But there's no disagreement between us, Imam. Okay. Thank you. Now 28.3.
detention register. Can you please explain quickly, please?
Yes, Chair. What the existing clause states is that the particulars of children must be separately recorded. Now, perhaps I could, for the benefit of the committee, just explain how things work at the moment in the police service. At the moment, we have one detention register. And in that detention register, all people sequentially, as they are admitted into a police holding cell, their particulars are recorded in the detention register. Whenever a person who is a child is detained in a police holding cell, we have instructed our members, and this is the practice that is followed as well, the information must be recorded in red in that register. But it will still be in the sequence of the person being admitted into the police holding cell. Now, the question is, what's the meaning of the clause 28.3 requiring that the information be separately recorded? Now, this is one question that we have, and we have a difficulty with that. But the second aspect that you need to, that the committee need to take note of is the fact that we are in the process of computerizing our whole detention system. It means there will no longer be a register. It means that the information will be recorded on the computer, and it will be recorded through software. Now, if we say it must be separately recorded, what does it mean? Must it be recorded in terms of a separate program or what? We would prefer the word separate to be removed. That is the bottom line.
Okay, explain just what you meant, Department. Laurette, you're going to do that, thank you. What did you mean by separately?
No, I was going to remind the committee that you've agreed to the wording last week. So we agreed to use
that wording.
So why
didn't you brief him before he came in? What were you all doing on Easter Sunday?
I think we also forgot in some respects that we discussed.
Yeah, but you're young, unlike me. So, I mean, there's no excuse.
No, we didn't. Commissioner Saldanes is not young.
Okay. No, we understand. He's been incapacitated, if that's the word. Okay, so you wasted our time, but it's fine. I think you made your point. I'm so rude, really. You can see, as Bulalani would say, he wants to get a cup of tea badly.
Okay, Chair, if we can move on to Clause 95. Now, it requires from the National Commissioner to draft and issue national instructions, but it then says very clearly that the National Commissioner must act in consultation with the other Director Generals of affected departments. Now, as far as we are concerned, the words in consultation means that there must be agreement. We prefer after.
I think it was just the way it was drafted at the time. It has to be. It didn't take into account PFMA, so I think that is a given. Because remember, it should be after consultation.
Something. While I'll live with that, I would prefer in consultation, actually. I think, really, that at the end of the day, when it comes to children, and other issues too, I don't think the relevant portfolio or ministry is necessarily one to preeminently or preponderantly decide something. That's my view, but I'll live with it. Let's not have an argument. Everybody have it in consultation? Fine. I just want Christine and Vanara to know that I wasn't, and that I'll raise this thing in the year 2009 if I'm back. Hopefully not in this committee with the new chairperson.
Yeah, I must make a point.
Yeah.
I haven't finished my further point, which would have assisted the process in that, in the monitoring aspect of it, and we've done it in sexual offences amendment, is where we pull together the policy. And that is what I'd suggested the previous occasion, that we beef up a new section which looks at the monitoring aspect. Because remember, it's individual accountability, but you want them to work together as a team. Otherwise, the one DG depends on the other, and you come here oversight-wise.
Chairperson, the last proposal, we propose that the new subclause 10 be inserted in clause 95. And this subclause, the intention of the subclause is that the Director General of Social Development must inform the South African Police Service of the contact particulars and of all probation officers that are available in the Republic. Because you must understand, we have 1,193 police stations throughout South Africa. We don't want to have a situation where a specific police station tells us that we don't know where the probation officer is. So we want to provide them with this information. We want it to be updated on a six-monthly basis, because a police station will not necessarily know when a probation officer moves into the area or out of
point. We get the drift. Department of Social Development, Connie, don't you agree with them? Aren't they making enormous
mistakes? We agree.
Thank you. Problem solved. Anything else you want to say?
We need to take into account what I mentioned the last time. The entire integrated justice system is getting automated. And all of these registers, we're compiling all of them to be, in terms of software, compatible with each other. So that would take care of all of the issues.
Back to one outstanding matter. Now, what have we decided about separately? We've agreed on that already.
But the automated system would organize that.
But would it mean in effect to the actual amendment of the wording?
I think it needs to be amended. Right. So
okay, so you will cover the case. Okay, we agree, Vanara, mate. You're noting that. Thank you, my friend. Okay, now what?
Chair, thank you very much. These are all the proposals that we have, and we are available for any...
Yeah, now this is the easy part. What we really want to know is your capacity to do the things that relate to your role in implementing this bill. Now, where does that come in? Do they go away now, or what's happening?
No, I think we agreed at 2 o'clock.
Right, so you're still going to be here?
Yes.
Okay, I apologize on our behalf for the lunch already. It'll be very bad, but it's Parliament. We're still transforming the lunch, but you are welcome to stay for lunch. Now, let's move on to Clause 33. Anybody got anything to say? Hopefully not. Pulalani, I hope you've got nothing to say. Please say you've got nothing to say. Okay, good. Pulalani says, I speak for him today. He's got nothing to say. Let's go to page, what page is it? Help me, Lawrence. Lawrence actually has to go from 1 o'clock to hopefully not too long, 3:15, is that right? Lorette will take major responsibility with our colleague on the law part. Whoever is going to do it. I don't know who's the lawyer and who's senior and who's not.
They're both lawyers.
Right, okay. So fine. Let's go to page whatever, page 29.
29.
Good. Now we're starting with part 3.
It's part 3.
Right, now the way we're going to operate, friends, is we're going to use the new D and the... DJ. DJ is Daksha Jackie, right? I don't know, we left Anne out, she might be upset, but it's too late now. So we'll settle for DJ, okay? DJ and the D. Now we've got a new D, right, members? Where's the new D? Yeah, here we are. New D. It's called 41. Okay, so we turn to 33. What is it, very quickly?
And then we look at the two documents. That deals with what a presiding officer must take into account when a child has been detained and it comes back, the child comes back to court for any reason. And then there are various factors that Clause 33 spells out that the presiding officer must take into account. Must determine whether or not the detention remains necessary, whether the placement remains appropriate, and record reasons for further detention if that's going to take place, consider reduction of bail if that's applicable, inquire whether the child is being treated properly or not. So there's a range of things. I'm not going to go through them all.
Yes.
It's in the interest of the child to make sure that when the child comes back to the preliminary inquiry or to a child justice court, that the presiding officer applies his or her mind regarding further detention.
All right, there's no proof, no comment from anybody on this, from the written text. We have 33. Any questions? Any comments from the NGOs? No. Now, just a quick question. What is an immediate remedial order? What does that mean? Remedial order? What's that? Just for a layperson's understanding, it's sub E of 33, line 3. Make an appropriate remedial order. What's a remedial order?
To remedy.
The problem that if it's not inspect, investigate the treatment and conditions and make an appropriate remedial order. So how must those problems or be addressed in a
I mean both words. Order meaning what? It's like a legal term that's obligatory on you to do it, and if you don't do it, what happens?
I must say, you know, there's I haven't seen the word a remedial order. I think it's something new in terms of legal legislation.
Can somebody help us as a lawyer who pretends to be a lawyer?
It's an interim order, Chair, which is subsequent to whatever order will come out later.
I'm just trying to find out what the effect of the use of the word order is. If it's an order, it seems to a layperson like me that they're obliged to do it, and if they don't do it, then they get into trouble. Isn't that what it means?
Yeah.
Court order. Yeah, that's the word. That's where I get the word order from, like a court or lawyer. Oh, you're a lawyer, eh? No, I'm serious. I mean, you're a lawyer, so you yeah. What?
Chair, just to explain, the context is the child is appearing in court. Maybe this is the second or third appearance. And he says, I'm being held together with a whole lot of adults in my cell at the prison. The court can then say, right, I'm going to investigate. And if it's true, he can come back and he can say, I'm ordering the Department of Correctional Services to move this child to a different part of the prison. That would be a court order, and then the Department of Correctional Services would have to do it. No, they do, because then they'll be in contempt of court if they don't.
So maybe I just read the separate issues of the witness and Daily News and so on from other people, but I see that, isn't that right, Steve? They don't do it. That's right. That's why the word order is relevant. It's got a much more binding sort of obligatory meaning. That's the word order from
contempt of court. And the minister can be locked away if that application.
Okay. Thank you. Conditions of detention now at preliminary inquiry at Child Justice Course 34. What's happening there? Please tell us very quickly.
The first sub-clause says that a child may not appear in a court wearing handcuffs and leg irons, and handcuffs may only be used if there are exceptional circumstances warranting their use. Sub-clause 2, I want to propose that it reads, a child held in a police cell while awaiting appearance at a preliminary inquiry or child justice court must be kept separate from adults and be treated in a manner and kept in conditions which take account of his or her age. That wording, I think, is similar to what's in the Constitution. A girl must be kept separate from boys and must be under the care of an adult woman. And where a child is transported to or from a preliminary inquiry or court, the child must, if reasonably possible, be transported separate from adults.
Jackie, if I represent you correctly, very quickly, you people are saying one is that a child has to be transported separately in all instances. You're saying that younger children are abused and robbed of their belongings in police vans on their way to court, presumably sometimes from older children. Now you're even suggesting the subtext, although Heidi Souls, hey, you know, we're not going to be able to do this, that the younger children who are, say, 14, they're abused by maybe the 17-year-olds, and it's really bad, and we're very sorry, but now we can't have separate transport for that. So that, can we say no to Hades Souls? Would say we agree with you, it's great, and under socialist society, I assure you we'll do that. The Human Rights Commission, this is an argument that is almost unconstitutional. 2181G is actually being undermined. And then South African Catholic Bishops Conference is saying the same point. And then CJA is saying it's not sufficiently protective of the rights of children. And, according to standards. I got a bit lost there in 5.1. Can you explain that quickly? What exactly are you saying there, Jackie? On page 31 of your text. I didn't understand this. I looked at this last night. Altogether. Obviously, you got the wrong. It's not in line 2. It's you're submitting that clause 34, not 32A, 34, there's no 34.4A, so it's 34.2A, is it? Are we together? Page 31?
Yep. Yes, I am.
5.1? Yeah, thank you.
Okay, just to say that under 2A, I'm sorry, the numbering might be wrong, yeah. 2A, the words, according to standards, as prescribed, go under 2A. for to refer to treated in a manner and kept in conditions which take account of his age. Just say that there should be regulations prescribing the conditions. B, that we were a bit concerned that under the care of an adult woman, that has should be an adult woman official, not just any woman that might present themselves at court. And then, again, C, that the words, if reasonably possible, be deleted. Because, again, it's undermining the constitutional.
Yeah, the word official, isn't that correct? Shall we agree on that? That's easy to do, right? Now, the next thing is, I don't understand where these words appear, according to standards as prescribed. Where do they appear? Can Lawrence, can you help me?
So that thing with that chair.
But it doesn't appear here. I tried last night to find it.
They want to include it, Chair.
Oh, you want to include it.
But, Chair, our argument, yeah, our argument on that was that 90, I see we also have a typo in our response. It should be 95.6a, Roman 6. Already says that there should be regulations on all aspects relating to the treatment and conditions of children while in detention as preliminary inquiry at a court, and so it goes on. And it refers specifically to Section 34 in here. In so we thought it's already covered. We didn't need to add in those words.
What do you say then, Jackie?
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm just... And I think the members of the committee, when we get the second round of the text, I really feel very strongly that we should not bear repeat over legislate, and conditions change, and you must allow regulations and the minister to have some latitude. But on the other hand, we shouldn't give ministers too much opportunity to regulate. And the department, like most departments in this situation, keeps saying, yeah, well, 95C, 95C, or whatever. That's not going to be acceptable to us. It's really something no committee worth its salt will just say, okay, you know, let them just do what they want to do, and they won't. If they don't approve of this law, they won't. We don't know who the new minister is going to be, okay? If it was Anne Skelton, I'd feel more confident, you know, that that's going to happen. But, hey, you know, so I don't think we should give the minister too much of latitude, but now then we can't over-regulate. But there's another issue here about keeping children separate, right? So the department says, Anne, Jackie, that take, for example, Northern Cape. You've got long distances to travel. Now, surely in such situations, it's reasonable to say that children and adults might, in those circumstances, be forced to be in the same pickup truck or whatever it's called, a quela or whatever. I don't know how it's done. Now, the point is, can't we settle, come to a compromise on 34.2c by saying, where a child is transported to or from a PI or child justice court, the child must be transported separate from adults unless there are exceptional circumstances. I don't know the legal words that dictate otherwise, rather than saying it's reasonably possible. Because reasonably possible allows too much of latitude. Unless there are exceptional circumstances, and it may be the Northern Cape qualifies to be exceptional. If we were to suggest that, Anne, Jackie, you have to be pragmatic, really. Steve?
Higher. Save in very exceptional cases, but it's a difficult one. You know.
Have them first, then we'll come to you. We'll ask you to reply at the end. Let's hear the participants who agree with this. What do you say?
Yeah. There's just been so many incidents of children being held together with adults and being abused that, you know, the only way that we could possibly... Well, that we would, I think, and I speak for Anne, agree to some form of transporting together with an adult is if there was some direct supervision of that particular area. So then perhaps a police official would be in the holding area of the van together with the child and the adult. Now, I know that might be too burdensome on the police, but I really don't think that we could allow a constitutional principle to be placed aside on the basis of resources. This isn't something that we're legislating on. This is something the Constitution requires, is that children be kept separately.
Yeah, but the Constitution also has a clause of limitations, but that's also very clear. Okay, we get the point. Now, I want to ask, tell us what really happens. In other words, how many police do you normally have? If you have two, they both sit in the front. Now, instead of gossiping with each other, in the rare instances that they are there, why can't one of them sit in the back?
Chair,
Chair, that would compromise the security of the transport itself. So, because if you have a police member in the back of the police van, that member may not be armed. Otherwise, he may be disarmed and be shot, and et cetera, et cetera. So now it means that you only have one armed member. But in actual fact, I have no problem with the proposal. That if they are transported together, there must be a police official supervising the transport itself. I have no problem with that. But to say that we can only transport them together in very exceptional circumstances, then, sir, I tell you now, in the Northern Cape, it is very exceptional. And how can you justify to say that's very exceptional? We know it beforehand. It's going to happen. There's no other way of doing it.
It means the long distances in this case. It applies only to one province and not in every case either. It depends on the distance. In other words, can I get you clearly? You're saying that you don't have a problem. Now drop the words in exceptional circumstances and then say, okay, provided there's a police person in the back. Now, what worries me is won't that open the scope in Pietermaritzburg where you've got to drive 5 minutes and they're going to dump children with adults and they'll put somebody in the back?
Well, my immediate question was...
I think it's safer to go the exceptional circumstances route. I like what Steve says. But let's hear from Bulalani, who hasn't spoken for a while, and Imam. We'll come back to the department. What we want the department to do is to more or less like pull all the threads together and help us to arrive at consensus too. But sometimes you intervene faster because you're able to give us an opportunity to expedite the discussion. Now, is that sort of thing? Well, come in now because it may help us. Yeah.
Let me just say that in terms of the monitoring, as I was saying, and perhaps what we should do is come up with the draft so that we don't keep going back to it. In 95C, which we would now change to the monitoring aspect, we could include the issues of transportation. So there's a more of a monitoring aspect to seeing where the challenges are. You also can't forget that we've got these provincial committees who have to then provide that monitoring oversight aspect. And if you look at 95C, you've got a range of aspects that you say we must come back and report on. If we include transportation there, as part of that entire section on monitoring, I think it would cover to a large extent that problem that we currently have. And over and above that, I think it would be regulated. But more so, the other committees who play the monitoring aspect must also then be held accountable.
Again, I come back to this. We don't want to leave this hanging in the air.
No, but it's legislated for, Chair, in terms of a monitoring component. The challenge we're having right now is it's not in front of you, so you can see it. And my proposal.
Right, so we come back to this. But you see, what when we come back to it, we merely want to take decisions and have a bit of a discussion, not start from square one again. So let's understand where we're agreeing and disagreeing, right? So since we've taken this discussion so far, let's pull it somewhere and then summarize it, Christine and Vanara. And when we come back, they will also give us a document, and we'll depart from the point at which we left the discussion rather than start again. Bulalani, Imam, on this issue about transporting them together under what circumstances, children and adults.
Thank you, Chair. I think we should not treat this as an operational matter because it creates problems, yes. And it's a highly principled matter because that is why I'm inclined to agree with exceptional circumstances. Because we all agree that at the back of the van, it will be all criminals. The adults will be there are criminals. They might be hardcore criminals. So we must be extremely sensitive to that, that children, you must have these exceptional circumstances for them to be in the same transport with
them. Institution, they have to get separately. Yes. So let's agree, Bulalani.
And then the other issue there. Now, can I come back after Imam? I've really forgotten it. I will come back after Imam.
Chairperson, we have two issues here. The one is for girl children. Yeah, girl children, I take it, this clause means that they are transported separately, together with an adult woman, right? With them. Is that correct?
Both male and female.
No. I'm talking here about B, right, to B, right? That clause means, according to my mind, am I correct or incorrect, that they are transported separately here, right, the girl children, together with the woman.
Yeah,
I don't see why, if we say under exceptional circumstances here for boy children, right, we are maybe an iota away from they must be transported, you know, separately. An iota away, right? I mean, children must be treated, you know, exceptionally anyway, in the interest of the child. So why don't we just make it? What is the problem? Is it an economic problem? Is it what type of problem is it?
Now, the problem they're talking about is if we use the word exceptional, it will be meaningless because in the Northern Cape, because of the huge distances, it's not the exception, it's like the rule, is that correct? And therefore the word exceptional becomes meaningless, to which my reply is in the context of the country as a whole, because of the specificities of the Northern Cape and distances, you can consider that exceptional. Now, the interesting question you've raised that I hadn't thought about before, and before you come in, can we just get some clarity? This applies to both girls and boys. In other words, when we say that adults must be kept separately from children, we mean also that women who are adults, who are in prison, will be kept separately from girls who are in conflict with the law. Isn't that correct? It applies to both. Right. So go ahead, sorry.
My view is that it should be that they must be transported separately. Take that if reasonably possible out altogether.
Yes. That's my view. You're suggesting, yeah. We feel it should be taken out altogether. We're agreeing on that.
Yeah.
The question is therefore how do we cater for those exceptional circumstances? The one option is in conditions where children are with adults, let's put in a supervisor there, which means another police person, or let's drop that because then everybody will want to use that in circumstances outside the Northern Cape or similar stuff. That's why I prefer Steve Swart's option, which is what I think you're saying, and that's the direction we're going. Same thing, some of these issues get resolved anyway when you come to 95. So let's leave it suspended at this. We have agreed reasonably necessary is out. We are less inclined to agree with the person being in the back of the van. We are more inclined to Steve Swart's option. But that's pending what Shireen delivers on 95. So Vanara, Christine, help us when we get there. Let's move on, thank you. What else is left from the police person side? Oh no, we're not there. We've gone on to Chapter 5, Assessment of the Child. Thank you. Now let's look at Clause 35. What are you saying in 35?
This deals with the duty of probation officers to assess certain children, and a child who is alleged to have committed an offence must be assessed by a probation officer, and then it sets out the various categories, and I don't know whether the committee wants me to go through all those. We've dealt with them in the roadmap in Clause 4, children who can be assessed, it's children below the age of 10, children who might be in need of care, children who are going to be considered for diversion in terms of the streaming, and a child, in the case of a child who's 10 years or older but below 14, the matter is being considered for diversion. Those are the categories of children, but we've been through this range of things quite often.
Okay, can I suggest, Jackie, it's very important that a committee understands what you're saying. So I'm going to try to summarize what you're saying. If there's something there that doesn't capture it, just you and Anne will correct me. Basically, Comrade Swim, this issue now is a big policy issue. It's related to Clause 11 as well. And we will have resolved in our different parties how to handle it. But we will be looking at issues of capacity related to this clause this afternoon and tomorrow morning in a workshop-type situation. Now, essentially, the arguments of the NGOs are that in the first instance, at the moment, assessment of all children, Connie, is taking place anyway. Right? Is that correct? Assessment is taking place anyway? Moreover, the existing legislation, the Probation Services Act and whatever, that is also providing for assessment for all children. And you're saying that
the department, or more appropriately, the 2002 committee's approach, is predicated on the view that assessment is for determining diversion, and almost wholly for that. Your argument not true. Assessment has many, many other purposes, including determining the age of a child where appropriate, determining what is the best course of action, even if the child's committed the most heinous crime. By having an assessment, you may be able to determine that putting the child in prison is not going to solve the problem. The child is somebody who should be in a psychiatric institution, or the child itself has been a victim of abuse, and so while you have them in prison, there may be counseling and therapy you have to apply. You need information about the circumstances of the offense that might guide a presiding officer on what the verdict is and what the sentence is. It's necessary to determine criminal capacity sometimes. And so there's a variety of reasons why you should have assessment, apart from whether the child should be diverted or not. You're also saying that you cannot understand why children who are committing sex offenses are treated so specifically and specially in respect of assessment. I'm not sure whether that's correct or not, but that's what I think you're saying. You're saying essentially that assessment will not serve the best interest of the child, the community, the victim, or the criminal justice system. You're saying it's very clear that assessment doesn't mean the child will necessarily be diverted. And you're also saying, what else are you saying?
That's pretty much it.
Just
except for the thing about there were a number of submissions regarding the addition of that other suitably qualified person, but we've already conceded that, yeah.
Saw that last night, but we've agreed we're in coming back to that, unless you provide an overwhelming argument. Now, where are we at the moment? The Department of Social Development, Connie came last week and said, we can deliver. We are delivering assessment for all. In fact, in our planning, we based it on a bill that will finally be processed through this parliament, which will provide for assessment for all. That's what Connie said. We said to Connie, hey, it's great. We're very pleased as a committee. We'd love it if that's the case. But as a committee, with the greatest of respect to her, it's got nothing to do with an individual, even if Karl Marx sat here, we would have challenged him. Show us the evidence. Moses Kotane was here, we'd have done the same. Show us the evidence. That is what a parliament committee has to do. So hopefully, tomorrow, the problem will be solved when we get all the evidence and our life becomes easy and the department's life becomes difficult because we have to rewrite the bill. Okay? So, Connie, I'm looking forward, and so is Bulelani, and so is Carol, and all of us. We really want it to be the way you said it. You know, we really wish it's that the way, and then the department will also just have to work. So we look forward to your submission. What can we do at the moment with this clause? Nothing. Is that correct? Right. Let's move on to clause 36. What does 36 say? Oh, the department's reply to remind members, because we must give attention to the department. They are here. Reply to it, but if I can be fast, right, because now I've got a new text from you, so let me go back to my old text, which I read last night, 36, right, 36, you've been very brief, because you made this point so many times, you're now fed up, and you're saying, this is really a policy issue that was decided on by the 2002 committee, and it's based on the fact that assessment is for diversion, and if you're not diverting certain categories of offense and or age, what's the point of having an assessment? And when somebody said it's nonsensical for you, I won't mention who it was, to say you'll have assessment where a child is in need of care, when in fact it's the other way around, that you must first obviously have assessment to tell whether a child, you're saying it's very consistent with what is there in the Children's Act. So that person presumably either hasn't read the Children's Act, which would be very disappointing since she's a senior lecturer at a certain university, which isn't in Cape Town, and maybe a vice chancellor wants to check out what she does apart from memorizing the Child Justice Bill. The fact of the matter is, your point is, that what is in the current version of the Child Justice Bill is more consistent with what is there in the new Children's Act and Children's Amendment Act. And you
say a whole lot of things that we can find on page 1 and 2 of your text, and you refer to sections 29, 7, 47, 1, 68, 154-154 of the Act, and when Anne sits next to me for lunch or whenever, she will want to reply to that, but she must feed that into the committee before 5 o'clock tomorrow. And you even suggest that the Children's Amendment Act Bill 2006 goes even further. No, that's a separate issue. You're basically saying that what you've got in the CJB is very consistent with what's there. And you're making the point that the bill here is primarily about conflict, children in conflict with the law. As far as crime prevention and those sort of things, and the role of assessment and play there, that's addressed in the other legislation and so on, right? So we will apply our minds at the end of the issues that we're going to go through via capacity. But for now, those are the two sides. But the department, I skimmed over what you're saying. Do you want to say something very quickly? Yeah.
Yes, now, Chair, maybe just to put it in context, that we referred there to the Children's Act and the Children's Amendment Bill in the just on the issue of how do you identify whether the child is a child in need of care, and we said that will still be there. And just to maybe say that you had mentioned all those categories that might not then be assessed, but actually all those you mentioned will be assessed. It's just certain other ones that will not be assessed. Because children, if you have to determine the age for under 10, if you have to determine age between 10 and 14, they will be assessed in terms of this. Also, if it's a child who may be in need of care, they will go for assessment in terms of 35. But it's just really children outside of that that will not. But
that's how they present their arguments, right? And then you say, well, actually, that's not a fair argument because many of the things you are saying are catered for in a different way in the child justice bill as we have it now. And I agree. Okay. So basically, 36. Where are we? 36. Can you help us, Lawrence, Shireen?
That sets out the purpose of assessment.
No, sorry.
Yes. On a general point, I think it's a little bit, I'll be cautious to rely on a bill to deal with another bill, because a bill might change while it is still in the process of being passed. So I think we must be cautious.
Very much agree with you, which brings us, it's 1 o'clock, isn't it? It's there for lunch. I don't know why Lolly's so terrified of me. Oh, okay, thank you. Lunch, we're back at 2. Bye. The usual place, which is is it all assembly? Is it DA? Okay, it's a sit down lunch today. It's in ground floor, this building. Is that right, B? Yeah, okay, you'll follow Lolly. I can leave my stuff here. Yeah, okay.
You can leave your stuff. There's also lots of them.
Okay. No, I'm not late for the
book.
Very well,
thank
you. And I just have one more thing.
But one guy I worked with a lot. I wanted to tell you, I think it was a
Thank you.
Yeah.